Hello, friends. We're still working on the externalization of the hierarchy, but there were some pages at the beginning of the book that I skipped over when I began. I have covered through videos 93 of them. From page 61 to page 701. But now we have to do the beginning work just for the sake of completeness. So we will begin, it says pages 0 to 701. Notice that this was copywritten in 1957. So we realized that some of these books appeared later than Alice Bailey's death, and they were given out to the group to study before the general public received them. We begin with the great invocations, and I'll just read them. We have had much discussion concerning them, and in the Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2 commentaries, which are written, I have commented on these great invocations. Maybe I'll take it up in a video at some point, as they're is much that one can do with a video that cannot be done maybe in the more careful way of writing. I suppose writing gives us greater exactitude of thought and videoing more spontaneity. So here are the great invocations, and just tune in with them and see what you feel, what moves within you, and then I will at some point turn to the for a revisit. I will turn to where these are discussed in Discipleship 2. Let the forces of light bring illumination to mankind. Let the spirit of peace be spread abroad. May men of goodwill everywhere meet in a spirit of cooperation. May forgiveness on the part of all men be the keynote at this time. Let power attend the efforts of the great ones. So let it be, and help us to do our part. Well, this is 1935. At the time that a very strong push to avoid the physical precipitation of the impending war was on the mind of hierarchy and being advanced by its disciples. It was not enough. These words are deep, and they involve Shambhala and higher beings. We may remember that the spirit of peace is an extraplanetary being. We may remember that the only place of perfect peace on our planet is Shambhala. So, and by the way, I've set these great invocations to music, and I think you can find them on YouTube and also on CDs. This was given approximately 85 years ago. And we can see and feel its power and its ability to evoke goodwill. which is love in action. As I say, I would like to return to Dinah 2 some years later now, and perhaps do a video on what the Tibetan says regarding this first of the great invocations. Now, the second one was given out in 1940. The war had begun, and it was more for the use of those who were disciples and who could tolerate its or accept its very strong language. It's a rather first-ray invocation, first-ray stanza. And surely enough, at the end of 1942, the Lords of Liberation did issue forth, and in their own way, that DK is not allowed to discuss fully, they saved the day, saved humanity from going down as hierarchy thought humanity might and even would. And this too is set to music. Let the Lords of Liberation issue forth. These beings are working from Shambhala. Let the Lords of Liberation issue forth. Let them bring succor to the sons of men. Let the rider from the secret place come forth and coming save. Come forth, O Mighty One. Let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with massed intent. Let the fiat of the Lord go forth. The end of woe has come. Come forth, O Mighty One. The hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. Let it be spread abroad, O Mighty One. Let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O Mighty One, and blend these three. Construct a great defending wall. The rule of evil now must end. And indeed, evil was ascendant at that time, and the invasion of Europe was proceeding as the Nazis hoped it would. And France was conquered. And the English were driven back. They were saved at Dunkirk, but they were driven back. So the three aspects of divinity are here invoked: will, love, and activity. And the Mighty One coming forth is the rider on the white horse, the Kalki avatar, the Christ. And the Lords of Liberation, again, are very high beings working through Shambhala. Liberty, equality, and fraternity are names which could be applied to their three approaches. So basically we have Aquarius, liberty, Libra, equality, Gemini, fraternity, brotherhood between the two brothers in the light, symbolizing the brotherhood of East and West and the coming brotherhood of man. And finally, of course, the stanza of the great invocation with which we are familiar. Though interpreting it in depth and on the number of levels it can apply is not an easy thing. Where is, for instance, the point of light within the mind of God? Are we talking about the cosmic mental plane? Are we talking about the cosmic Buddhic plane, or the soul of the soul of Logos? There are different levels on which these words can be interpreted, all the way from hierarchical levels to shambolic levels and to levels far beyond, such as Sirius, the Great Bear, and the Pleiades. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of man, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. And this is 1945, given out after the Christ had made his decision that he would return in physical presence, would reappear in physical presence to humanity on the outermost plane, most probably in his Maya Virupa. It doesn't involve, you know, as DK says, some nice child being born to a nice spiritual family and growing up to become the savior of the world. Hierarchy is working much differently, and the timing of the reappearance is acute. There's no time to waste in the usual method of growing up as we understand that process. The initiate Jesus did go through that process, and those early years were very important, and we have a few episodes from his life, his teaching in the temple. Maybe it was the Christ overshadowing him. And he was called Issa in the Agni Yoga teaching. And there is a tradition that he journeyed to India. And if he did, why did he? And did he meet Lord Maitreya in person and other masters and so forth? These are questions, but that was a more normal progress to maturity. The Christ already has his Maya Virupa. And I suspect that the now Master Chohan Jesus has his own Maya Virupa, in which he meets those who are in charge of the Christian church. So these are three great words of power. And far more than we suspect, they can mobilize human thinking, human understanding, human orientation. A great reorientation is required among the intelligent members of the human race, and these great words of power can be guidance for that. And we must promote especially the third stanza, with which we are most familiar, because it is our great instrument for encouraging the right attitude towards the reappearance of the Christ. Now, here we are in section one and the introductory remarks. It takes us to page 66. I think I began a little bit before that. So we have introductory remarks, and we have something here called the period of transition. Now, this is being written in 1934, just before that invocation was given out, and just before a great push emphasizing goodwill was advanced by the hierarchy. It didn't work, at least in the way that hierarchy had hoped, to forestall the precipitation of the second part of the Great War, 1914 to 1945. And D.K. elsewhere tells us there just wasn't enough interest, there were not enough numbers among the disciples to forestall what the hierarchy did not consider inevitable, but which turned out under the circumstances to be inevitable. So this is called the period of transition, and we'll just move ahead with some of this work. March 1934. One of the results of the world condition at this time is the speeding up of all the atomic lives upon and within the planet. Now, there are many kinds of atoms, we know. And the atom of substance, the atom that is man, the atom that is the logos, our planetary logos, and all these intermediary atoms, all these entities from the touch to very vast entities. Now, we're told that it will be increasingly easy to see and register the ethers. And perhaps one of the reasons is a change within the ethers themselves. And maybe this speeding up is part of the change that DK anticipates, that will give us a revelation of an adjacent and interpenetrating archetypal world we call the etheric world. This speeding up, okay, this necessarily involves the increased vibratory activity of the human mechanism, composed of many atoms, and the man himself is an atom, with a consequent effect upon the psychic nature, producing an abnormal sensitivity and psychic awareness. Now, this is a long time ago. Well, relatively long. And in the years before the Second World War, this was happening. It would be of value here to remember that the condition of humanity at this time is not the result of simply one factor, but of several, all of them being active simultaneously because this period marks the close of one age and the inauguration of the new. Well, this period in general, we're in a transition phase. It's considered a 500-year transition phase, overlap phase, between the age of Pisces and the age of Aquarius. The actual technical beginning of the age of Aquarius comes in the year 2017. And at the vernal equinox, or at the first day of spring, the line we call the vernal equinox will be oriented towards the 30th degree of Aquarius, and that's in the year, 2017. So there are many factors that are causing a developing sensitivity, rapidly developing sensitivity. The factors to which I refer are probably or primarily three in number. Several factors causing a increase in sensitivity and vibratory frequency within humanity. Okay. So number one is a transition period between the passing out of the Piscean age with its emphasis upon authority and belief and the coming in of the Aquarian age with its emphasis upon individual understanding and direct knowledge. We want that straight knowledge. We do not want authorities to impose upon us what we must believe, what we must credit as true. So it will be an age of greatly increased individual understanding. The activity of these forces, characteristic of the two signs, produces in the human body a corresponding activity. We are on the verge of new knowledges, plural, and the atoms of the body are being tuned up for reception. Well, I think, we are part of this elevation of frequency. No question that things are responding, vibrating at a higher rate now than they used to. And even, I would say now, more than when this was written some 85 years ago. Those atoms which are predominantly Piscean, responding to the Pisces influence, are beginning to slow down their activity and to be occultly withdrawn, as it is called, or abstracted, whilst those which are responsible for the New Age tendencies are, in their term, being stimulated and their vibratory activity increased. Now, I imagine that much use of the Om will facilitate this process. We've been told that use of the Om casts out that which is undesirable and brings in, attracts atoms of a more desirable character. What are Piscean atoms? What are Aquarian atoms? So, it may be that certain atoms are more responsive to the Piscean energy and others to the Aquarian energy. And a contest is on between increasing the vibration of atoms which are responsive to the Aquarian energy and decreasing the vibratory frequency of those which are responsive to the Piscean energy. Maybe it has something to do also with the evolutionary quality of the forms which these two streams of energy impact, and probably something to do with rays. When the sixth ray is very prominent, it being one of the rays coming through Pisces along with the second, stimulation, Piscean stimulation of the atoms is more likely. When the seventh ray is prominent due to increasing influx of seventh ray souls and maybe seventh ray personalities also is impacted, then Aquarian energy will be more easily absorbed. There are many people who do rebuff either energy. The people settled in their reactionary ways rebuff the Aquarian streams of energy. And those who are progressive and want the new civilization and maybe are at a stage of evolution which is more advanced, rebuff the old Piscean backward-looking energy. So what we're looking at here, three factors that are responsible for the condition of humanity. So, you know, even the atoms respond differently to these two streams of energy. And, you know, a simpler way of saying it is, are we responsive to the reactionary energy of Pisces, which wants to take us backward into mere belief and authority, imposed authority, which can become totalitarian in its nature and therefore must be banished, be defeated? Or are we more responsive to the progressive stream? Or do we know how to walk the middle road between them in order to exercise the art of the possible, which politics has sometimes been called? So just look at your tendencies. I don't think you would stay very long with the Alice Bailey studies if you were purely reactionary and backward looking in your orientation. You would be more attracted to the dogmatic thinking of the past. Now, the next point, the World War marked a climax in the history of mankind, and its subjective effect was far more potent than has hitherto been grasped. Well, we've seen the wreckage on the outer plane, but few of us are in the position to assess the destruction which occurred on the inner planes, and which ultimately was more important, because according to inner causes, so the forms in the outer plane will appear or will be swept away. Many wanted to rebuild the old civilization and the old buildings after the war. Recently, there was a great fire in Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, and that cathedral has such a tradition, also as a great work of art, that it can be understood why restoration, calls for restoration, immediately arose. Were these justified? Were they not justified? Could the money have been spent otherwise? Would it have been a permanent wound upon the city of Paris to see maybe the most famous cathedral in the world crippled and partially destroyed, reminding everyone of the destruction of the old? Would that have been a way to go, a proper way to go? Or does the rebuilding have value? DK seemed to say that when there was a lot of destruction of monuments, churches, and well-established edifices, that rebuilding was not necessary. Building for the new age was necessary. The restoration of the old was anti-evolutionary. So we're talking now about the inner effects of the Second World War. I'm just trying to make my, it will go. And our factors here, conditioning the state of humanity. The condition of humanity is the result of several factors, and we are noting what these factors might be. So the turbulent transitional period between the equinoctial ages inevitably changing from one to another is one of the major factors. Now, what else? A climax was marked in the history of mankind, and we're looking at the subjective effect of the Second World War, and maybe of the entire Great War, 1914 to 45. But of course, we are here dealing with only the first phase of that war, because this was written in 1934. So it is probably true that the entire Great War marked a climax in the history of mankind, but it could not be known that that second phase would precipitate at the time that this was written. So basically, he is referencing in this essay World War I. Through the power of prolonged sound, carried forward as a great experiment on the battlefields all over the world during the period of 4 years, 1914 to 1918, and through the intense emotional strain of the entire planetary populace, the web of etheric matter, called the veil of the temple, which separates the physical and the astral planes, was rent or torn asunder and the amazing process of unifying the two worlds of the of physical plane living and of astral plane experience was begun and is now slowly going on. Well, the sounds were terrific and maybe horrific compared to what humanity had experienced hitherto. And I've heard stories regarding the Second World War where sound simply destroyed bodies and they just disintegrated. A family might have been sitting at dinner, and when they were discovered, all of them dead, the bodies just fell apart due to the effect of overwhelming sound. They had, in those days, you know, also very big cannons. Cannons of tremendous size, really, even then. And the it must have been absolutely deafening. You always see people who are manning the artillery, you always see them holding their ears and bowing their head when the cannon goes off. It probably wasn't enough, and I'm sure many people emerged from those experiences with a compromised hearing and a compromised vehicle altogether. Anyway, the etheric web, which is normally considered to be a protective barrier, was torn. And Ezekiel was warned about that in the progress of the individual disciple. Be careful about the etheric web, because if you become overstimulated, rents will appear in it, and energies which are inimical to progress will flow in, and destruction will occur, and lives of rebuilding will be necessitated. It will be obvious, therefore, that this must bring about vast changes and alterations in the human consciousness. Whilst it will usher in the age of understanding, of brotherhood, and of illumination, it will also bring about states of reaction and the letting loose of psychic forces which today menace the uncontrolled and ignorant, and warrant the sounding of a note of warning and caution. Well, we do read in the book of Revelation that these hell worlds, these worlds populated by undesirable entities, will have their energies released, and these energies will precipitate upon the physical plane. And I think we may not recognize it when it happens, but I think sometimes in the arts it is happening. And we see or experience hell on earth. I've seen some of these performances by groups that are called black metal or satanic metal or something of that nature. The word metal means hard and unyielding and unresponsive and insensitive to the finer things of life, and it really does look like the demons of the lower astral plane have found a way to enter the consciousness of people, certain people on the outer plane, and that they are coming through and present with us. And all of this because of the rending of the protective webs. Now, eventually, these webs have to be worn thin because it is necessary to have a continuity of communication when you can handle it between the different planes and subplanes. But as he says, when you are ignorant and uncontrolled, it is a menace. And that's why Master Moria tells us that obsession, possession, has become a great danger to humanity. And not only are the leaders of the Black Lodge menacing humanity, and especially in those days, but their subsidiaries and those who are inspired by them create a menace. If you've read The Lord of the Rings or seen The Lord of the Rings, you understand the demon-like orcs who are the enemy of humanity, and they are extremely ugly and demonic and inimical to any human progress. Now, there are some terrible creatures on the lower levels. How they got that way is another matter, because God would not have created them or become them, as it were. But the wrong use of the free will has pretty much made them what they are. And we must guard against obsession and possession. And Master Moria tells us that the openness of the heart, the radiance of the heart, is one of the best ways to guard against possession. Now, here's a third factor, is as follows. It has been known for a long time by the mystics of all the world religions and by esoteric students everywhere that certain members of the planetary hierarchy are approaching closer to the Earth at this time. This is certainly going to affect the vibratory level, the customary vibratory level of the human being. And of course, all the atoms within the energy system of the human being. And it will contribute to a keying up, definitely. By this, I want you to infer that the thought or the mental attention of the Christ and of certain of his great disciples, the masters of the wisdom, is directed or focused at this time upon human affairs, and that some of them are preparing to break their long silence and may appear later among men. The word may is interesting because by the time we finish reading this book, we have a definite planning for reappearance and externalization in progress. So this will certainly affect everything within the human being. It will contribute to the keying up of the human condition, just the way the old reactionary energies will create the dullness and non-receptivity and the state of the automaton, the robot, without will and compelled by those who are directing the will, which you are not allowed to do, of course, according to the Syrian law of freedom. But then Sirius is a great example of a kind of cosmic Christ, and to its laws, the members of the Black Lodge do not adhere. They actually seek to defy those laws. So this approach that we have spoken of so much, because, you know, I'm beginning again at the beginning of the book, we have gone all the way to the end and all of the planning and reorganizing within hierarchy that must precede their emergence. We have discussed those things. So this necessarily, this approach has a potent effect, first of all, upon their disciples, the disciples of the great ones, and on those who are attuned to and synchronized with their minds. Hopefully, we will find ourselves synchronizing with the mind of our master and his ashram. And secondly, it should be remembered that the energy which flows through these focal points of the divine will have a dual effect and be destructive as well as constructive, according to the qualities of the bodies which react to it. So the condition of the form is very important when it comes to assessing whether the impact of higher energies will be constructive or destructive. And, you know, maybe both at certain times are necessary. We have two first-rate planets, Vulcan and Pluto, preceding the individual taking of the first initiation, and I would say also preceding humanity's taking of the first initiation. And those can be very destructive planets. And yet, from another perspective, Vulcan imposes the spiritual will, and that is constructive, and Pluto is the healer with the power of the serpent, as we have been told. So the approach, this keying up, it doesn't happen all at once. It's been 85 years since this has been mentioned, 86 years. It happens gradually, and maybe we're not even detecting the kind of keying up to which we are being subjected, but it is happening. He goes on, different types of men respond distinctively to any inflow of energy. I mean, maybe according to their point of evolution and their ray and astrological equipment, and the tremendous psychic stimulation is at this time going on. We see that, you know, from the kind of books that are being written and the kind of interests which are arising. And since America, or the United States, was, strangely, the center of the old Atlantean continent, we just find all that psychism arising again. And the bookstores literally littered with the results of that psychism. So a tremendous psychic stimulation, which can block reality, of course, is at this time going on, with results both divinely beneficent and sadly destructive. Always we have to differentiate the between two types of effects which even high energies can produce, depending upon the quality of the form. And this is something that students of esotericism can do or should do, whereas the average reader will not and will tend to simply accept what is written as if it were true. So again, these are factors which have contributed We have been reviewing. We have been reviewing three factors which have conditioned humanity at this time. So, you know, the difference in response of the different types of men. Yes, but mainly the approach of the hierarchy. That's number three. And the subjective effects of the war, at that time, the First World War, and the turbulence of the energy condition caused by the transition between the Piscean and Aquarian ages. So let's just say transitional turbulence, the subjective effects of World War I and the approach of the hierarchy ever closer at this time to humanity. DK is giving, you know, quite a few lists here, and they're very clear. In a 700-page book, it may be hard to hold them in mind, but a review of some of these clearly presented lists can help us in our service. It might be added also that certain astrological relationships between the constellations are releasing new types of force, which are playing through our solar system and onto our planet, and thereby making possible developments hitherto frustrated in expression, and bringing about the demonstration of latent powers and the manifestation of new knowledges. Well, there's one very strong triangle between the Great Bear Sirius, or maybe Little Bear, and Pleiades. And this has to do with Leo, with Pisces and Capricorn. And DK spends a lot of time dealing with that particular triangle and its descending effects until it reaches the human being and the human chakric system. This we've dealt with in esoteric astrology, you know, and in the study of the science of triangles. So we can't know for sure which astrological relationships he does mean, but well, of course, one of the major ones is the Pisces-Aquarius relationship. And that we have already dealt with. But between constellations, that's the kind of high-level relationship we are noting here. So when we speak of Leo Shambhala, Pisces, Sirius, and Capricorn, Pleiades, or we speak of Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity, we're dealing with something that has been recently very effective, though it did begin to wane, DK said, in the latter days, and probably other constellational relationships have taken its place. Let's say there might be a triangle between Leo, individuality, and Aquarius, the beginning of the development of real group consciousness, and finally Pisces, which leads to identification. We can put together a whole series of triangles which affecting humanity have the potential of elevating it. We can look at the development of the individual Christ under Virgo and the cosmic Christ under Aries, and maybe some kind of transitional phase where we prove ourselves in Scorpio, moving in triumph beyond individual concern. And that would be, these triangles just occur to me. There are so many triangles if we follow the system of Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Aries, Taurus, Cancer, Aries, Taurus, Leo, and we go round and round the circle. We can produce many triangles, not all of them active, not all of them equally important, but they are suggestive of the improvement which can occur. And for many people, moving from Cancer to Leo to Aquarius is a very important factor in the modern era. Moving from the mass consciousness in Cancer to individual personal consciousness in Leo, and finally to group consciousness in Aquarius. And we can see these arcs, these trends occurring in the modern era. And of course, they will be reflected in chakric triangles too. Basically, human beings have to learn how to think rather than only to respond with their solar plexus. So, we can have triangles that start with Mars and the solar plexus and move to the heart with Jupiter, and then move to the occult directing center, the head, Vulcan. You see, you can do that with planetary triangles. But he is talking about constellational triangles here. All this must be most carefully borne in mind by the worker in the field of human affairs. What has conditioned humanity? Why is humanity as it is? What are the factors which for the human being at this time are completely unavoidable? They're just part of a bigger picture, and to these influences, all of humanity is subjected. So if we are a worker in the field of human affairs trying to improve the human lot, we have to think carefully about these causes. If the present crisis is to be rightly appreciated and its splendid opportunities rightly employed, well, there was a crisis that goodwill might have solved. It turned out that I think the increased intensification of the counterforce warring against the good, and the insufficiency of disciplic effort made the war inevitable. Now, at the time that this was written, one phase of the war had occurred and it was not yet judged that the second would precipitate. As a matter of fact, the period of goodwill was imminent, and goodwill was widely spread abroad. So 1934 was the year in which this particular essay was written. But the splendid opportunities for peace and goodwill did not materialize. And again, you know, a number of reasons for that, on the side of the disciples and also on the side of the intensified onslaught of the Black Lodge. And, you know, the perversion of the Shambhala force when detached from the love energy, such as Hitler and his, quote, evil gang appropriated. So anyway, he goes on to say, I have felt it wise to write a few words concerning the condition to be found in the world today, especially in connection with esoteric occult and mystical groups and the spiritualistic movement. So, you know, if he tells us that the cult groups are the most glamored of all groups, obviously some kind of correction is needed and some kind of realistic assessment is needed. So this seems to be the next subject that he is going on to. And we have done just a few pages here. We're on page 5, basically. So why don't we call this program closed? And then if I have time, we will move on to the next section, where he's going to assess the condition of spiritual and occult groups. Sometimes I can stop at the right place according to time, and sometimes according to subject. So here we go. We've done about an hour of work here. Whoops. Yeah, let's get rid of the English and So this is the end of EXH01A and up to page 5 of the book. And next comes the beginning of EXH02A on some fine day in June, I hope, and soon. And we will take up this somewhat new division. It doesn't hurt to have this kind of background. We have dealt with matters concerning the externalization, which are a bit closer to us and which are more directly focused on the externalization and reappearance. We remember that he had to gather his material, his forces, his cooperators in the 20s. He gave out the World Goodwill and Triangles in the and the certain of the great invocations, invocation number one in the 1930s, and which is the period from which this essay comes, and then later focused on the externalization and the reappearance most focally in the 1940s. We read about that later in the book. So he's in this second decade where Triangles, World Goodwill, and his group of accepted disciples or almost accepted disciples were gathered together and were taught according to the C Group work, which was founded in the 1930s. That's where we are in the history of the Alice Bailey work. Okay, so we'll pick this up in a little bit. See, and this should be 02A. And we'll work at that. Everything that Tibetan writes is of value. I mean, these are the words of a master, and he tells us we don't study carefully enough, and we don't read with care and real understanding. A lot of the work I'm trying to do with commentary on what the Tibetan has written is to attempt to help deepen our understanding of what he has said. Now, of course, you can go into it yourself, and you probably will, or with your study groups, whatever, and you can arrange to go more deeply into his writings. But maybe these videos and these written commentaries will help deepen the approach and will help link up via Mercury, we might say, many pieces of information which should be related, or from which light, more light, can arise if they were related. So that's our hope. All right, so let's let this go now, and we'll stop our recording. Many blessings, lots of love to everybody, and let's go deeply into all these matters as much as we can. Somehow find the time to do it. It's hard, you know. I remember when I was really full of blazing aspiration, and I was quite a young person, maybe, you know, in my late 20s and 30s, I somehow found the time to study 10 hours a day till I, you know, almost became dizzy with it. That may be a little extreme, but we can find time to study in depth more than we usually do. So let's work on it. Okay, see you soon.